Hello, you're listening to Quasi Indefatigable Zenilith. I'm Jay Nimro, and of course we're on the old recording equipment. This is the old Big Dell laptop, and I've actually got a headset on, and hopefully it'll go a lot better and sound better. Last time I talked about magic bullets, and I want to talk about those some more. I'm going to reveal a little bit here the other kinds of podcasts I listen to. Let you know kind of where I get some of my thinking from. I tend to listen to, I bike sometimes back and forth to work. I usually download podcasts, MP3 files, and listen to them while I travel. Or while I'm trying to get up to speed here. Or while I'm, biking back and forth to work. Because I bike back and forth to work when it works. My bike's up at work, all my stuff's up at work. I'm trying to get things together so I can get through the winter. Okay. I hope I can. I'd love to. Last year I couldn't quite do it. I got up until just right, not too before Thanksgiving, and I caught a cold. It might have been the flu. I don't know. And that pretty much wiped me out until the first of the year, and then after Christmas, I got a gout attack. And that took about 3 months to finally knock down. So, So, I was out of commission there for bike riding for all that time. Finally got back into the groove of it again after that. It's kind of touch and go. I don't get to do it every day just because of my work. Like right now, I'm going to go to Clovis Metallics and I'm going to be there. Maybe just today, maybe today and tomorrow. I don't know. We'll find out. Anyway. excuse me. I listen to Free Talk Live. You can listen to them at www.freetalklive.com. It's all smushed together, Free Talk Live. I tend to listen to them the 3 hours. It's interesting. I have grown weary of conservative talk. They're all a bunch of Bush appeasers, and I'm not excited by that. And they're a bunch of, I'm sorry, they're a bunch of freaking warmongers right now. And I think this was a stupid war to get into, this war with Iraq. It was over. The war is over. Now we're just trying to occupy, and we can't do it. We suck at occupation. He wants to clamp down harder to try to make things happen. And you're going, what are you clamping down against? You know, always paint this picture that these are somehow outsiders that have just infiltrated Iraq, and once we can get them to go away, we'll be okay. And you go, no, there's a significant enough number of people that they're going to make your life miserable until you leave. So, anyway, well, that wasn't what I was going to get into. You know, and I like these guys. I'm much more of a libertarian than I am anything else. But I enjoy the talk on there. Free Talk Live tends to be kind of libertarian purist. Okay. Well, the other one I've been listening to lately, and I just got onto this maybe about a month ago, was a fellow named Dan Collin. He's a historian, called him a military historian. He went to school and studied history. And I think he's also into journalism, too. Anyway, he has a podcast. It's kind of interesting and fun. And he's interesting. He waffles and slides around a bit. Sometimes he's very, very libertarian, and sometimes he's not. He's kind of inconsistent, but I just I was just thinking that's true of a lot of people. So when I talk about things on here, those are some of the things that influence what I talk about. But now I'm going to get to the subject that I was thinking about getting to, which has nothing to do with those things. It's about a dream I had last night, actually this morning. Let me set you up with the scenario. There's some background that you need to know before we can get to the dream. I spent most of my high school years in Lubbock, Texas, and there was a reasonably good sized group of LDS kids, Mormon kids, and that I was a part of that group. Somewhat. I'm a standoffish person. I don't get much into groups. But as much as I could do it, I was part of that team, the group. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of girls, a lot of boys. And, you know, I had my friends that were boys, and I had my friends that were girls. And, you know, I had crushes on them. I had 3/4 of them, and from one time to another. And, you know, I had always thought, as a young person, that I was weird. I was a bit of an outsider. I suppose I kind of was, in a way. You know, I was full of insecurities. Everybody else seemed to be just kind of going along just fine, and I just seemed to kind of struggle more than others did. I don't know if it was the autism. I don't know. Anyway, you know, there were girls there that were really nice and really out. I really liked them. You know, I would go to dances and they would single me out to dance with me. I always thought it was a charity case. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe they just liked me. I don't know. Anyway, so there were two girls basically my age. I was kind of in the middle. There was a whole cluster of guys that were like a year older than I was, a year to year and a half older than I was. You know, they were in a different grade than I was in school, so it was kind of hard to, like, be really my friend because, you know, grades mean everything, you know. You're only supposed to have friends in your immediate age group. And so that was difficult, and there wasn't any kids really younger than me, but like 2 or 3, maybe 2 years younger than I was. So I was kind of alone. There were two girls that were in the same class as I were. We went to the same high school. And I was this really shy guy. Well, I think the first... Anyway, I left. My mom was going to move back to her home in Clovis, New Mexico. She swears up and down I had the choice. If she did express that I had a choice, I didn't feel like I had a choice. I went to Clovis with her, to a place that I hadn't lived in since I was in the fifth grade, so I really didn't have anything to do. You know, what few friends I had, I was leaving, so... I left there and I went to high school somewhere else for my senior year and basically kind of laid low and just slid through and got out of high school, got my scholarships, got all my credentials, because everybody just loved Jay because, you know, I was pretty good at school. Well, there was this girl I kind of liked there. We had just kind of, during our teenage years, kind of grown up together. And I guess it was just kind of a supposition, maybe on her part, that something was going to happen between us. All the kids from there ended up going to Rick's College. So, not all of them. Some of them did. I went to Texas Tech, you know, I just didn't gel. So I went to Rick's for one semester, and this girl that I'm talking about, who's Kirsten, she was there. And I seem to recall that we talked to each other a few times. She invited me to a party they were having. It kind of, she wasn't living in the dorm, she was living in whatever. This was her second year at Rick's. I had gone to school at Texas Tech a little bit. Then I had gone to San Juan College. And then I had gone up to Rick's. So she'd already been there a semester and I hadn't. So she had all these friends. And I kind of joined halfway through the semester. I always do that. Why do I do that? Anyway, so I had kind of come in kind of at a weird time. Right after the Christmas break, I came for the what was called the winter semester, and you know, I went to one thing, and I kind of got the impression she basically was kind of ignoring me. She was having too much fun, and I was just kind of sitting there going, "Well, what's all this? I don't know anybody here. I don't party at all. I don't do stuff very much. I'm very boring." So, then I got my call. I went on my mission. I guess the supposition was, did she come to my farewell? She might have come to my farewell. I think I invited her. I think she came. She and her family. And I went off on my mission. La, 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 la. I wrote her a few times. I can't say I wrote her a lot. I think I wrote her quite often the first few months of my mission and never really got a response. Finally, I got a card from her. And so I respond to the card. You know, I wrote back. And she never wrote back again. I might have gotten two. Something like that. And that was it. So I went on about my mission, had a great time, yada, yada, yada. You know, as I grew up, I think I got a little more comfortable with myself and with other people. I found some way to relate to other people. I don't really know. And she just wasn't a part of that. Well, she came to my homecoming. Now, you have to know that my wife, Lisa, she was there. She wasn't my wife then, come on. But she was there, too. I'm guessing Kirsten was thinking that we were just going to kind of pick up where we left off. Her plans were to go on a mission herself, and I think she was going to study something like podiatry, and, you know, I'll never really know what she did, because, you know, life went on. Oh, you should have been there that day, that Sunday, though. Oh, she stared daggers at Lisa. She was, I guess she kind of thought that I was her guy. And you're going, and I was like, you never gave me that impression. You never wrote to me. You never reciprocated. I never heard anything until I just said, hey, you know, you want to come for my farewell? I was like, yeah. I don't know what she had in her head that was going to happen. I guess when I invited her, you know, she thought that this was going to be great. And she was like the girl that waited for me. And I'm going, I don't have any impression of that. You never wrote me. She stopped. I stopped writing her. I even gave her a thing and said, you know, there's really no point. I don't remember. I could go back and look at the things I wrote. I could try. I don't think I kept a lot of the letters. My dad did, but I didn't send him the ones for Kirsten, for Pete's sake. That's just crazy. Anyway. So, I never saw Kirsten again. Never really, I've never really contacted anybody from back then. I've kind of felt, you know, the whole circumstance around my teenage years, I've almost like said, you know what, I would just assume keep that in the past. The things I did, the things I thought were so, I mean, I'm pretty radical now, but they were just weird then. And, you know, if people, I'm frankly embarrassed. I'm really embarrassed by my teenage years. So I just tend to ignore what little I choose to remember. So, you know, and I don't know if people think, well, he's just a stuck-up snob. I said, I'm not stuck-up. I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed by me, not about other people. I thought the other people were much more with it, much more, you know, had much more going for them. I was the screwed-up kid from a screwed-up family. You know? Everything was just screwball about it. Well, okay. Let me tell you about this dream. Now, there was some other elements to it that really had nothing to do with this. But what happened was, my wife and I are sitting there, and there's some people had come over to borrow our phone to call somebody. And all of a sudden, boom! It's almost like she came with this group like they were connected somehow, but I know they're not. But then Kirsten is like sitting across the table from Lisa and I. And it's like, hi! And I figured out, you know, I wanted to ask her. I said, well, you know, how's your life? You know, I didn't know how to say it in the dream to keep from just being an idiot. You know? How great did you do when you walked away and I never saw you again? Or whatever. So I asked her, you know, well, did you ever go on your mission? And she gave me this look. That was a dirty look. Shook her head, no. And then I woke up. I wanted to continue the conversation, but I didn't because the dream was over. And I think I knew that I was dreaming, number one. And number two, I knew I wasn't really talking to her, so it was pointless to ask her questions because I have no idea if it was, you know, if the answers I was getting were even remotely, you know, useful. So, I got up and I started thinking about, well, I didn't get up. I was laying there in bed, you know, I got the stream like at 3 in the morning, so I was sitting there going, okay, I'm awake, all right. Oh, I didn't bring that, guy, I just fixed an air bed for me so I'd be more comfortable, and I didn't bring it. God, what an idiot I am sometimes. I forget everything. I swear if it wasn't nailed to me, God. Okay, anyway, so I started to think about it, and I thought back to those friends. Now, I've brushed against some of them on occasion later. You know, when we were older, adults. And, I don't want to denigrate them, because it's not important. What I did learn is that, you know what, we're all just kind of getting by. We really are. You know, there's, you know, you can look at incredibly with it people. And when you sit down, you talk to them, they'll talk about their problems. You know, if they have problems, they'll talk about their problems. And they'll say, you know, well, I've got this. My family's not doing as well as they want to. There's some things I'd love to get to, but I just never have. And, you know, and they can go through a whole laundry list of troubles that they're having, problems, things that snuck up on them. And, you know, we're all more alike than we think. We really are. Oh, Utah. Alright. I don't like the interstate because it's a pain in the butt. All right, pardon me. So now I'm off the interstate, and things are going to go much better because I'm going to be on a highway, little two-lane roads, which I like the best. No traffic. Because it's full of people that don't go anywhere, don't do anything. That's where I live. Okay. So I started thinking back, or I just started thinking about it. And I said, you know, I may have been a screwed up kid. I may have had my problems. And I'm sure it could be cataloged easily. But you know what? Looking back at other people, they were probably just as insecure, just as hard up, you know, looking around at other people saying, oh, they are so much better than I am. And I always thought it was amazing. You know, the guys and the girls that were a year or two older than I was, oh, I thought they had the world. You know, everything was just fantastic. Boy, isn't this great. And then when I got there, it was like, well, I don't know. I'm just as screwed up as I ever was. And I started saying, you know what, do they feel that way too? I don't know if it's the autism, if it's me, or if this is a universal thing. I'm going to go ahead and say it's universal. It helps me. You know, everybody, I guess, has those problems. You know, inadequacy. Feeling like they can't do what they probably could have done, or, geez, I chosen differently, or whatever. And I was thinking back to the cure staring at me and giving that look, as if the thing I had done that Sunday for a couple of hours had just destroyed her life, and she hated me for eternity. And you're going, that's just dumb. Even if it's true, even if she really does feel that way, and how could I know? Because I haven't seen her in 20 years. Nearly 20 years. Except for that 3 hours. Before then, it was a good 20, probably 22, 23. You know? I hope that she got past it. I hope that she got everything she wanted in life. Not that any of us do. You know? You can make all the plans in the world you want, then they change on you. For better or worse. I don't know. Anyway. I hope she does good. I hope everybody does good. You know, we can't get too scared about these things. Oh, I'm not going to make it. Oh, I'm such a loser. Come on. It's mostly about not getting depressed. And it's mostly about knowing that, you know what? Most of the time, things work out. I mean, you might not get to be a rock star. You might not get to be, you know, this or that, you know, this fantastic thing. You might not get those things. But that's okay. If you work toward being a good person, you try to do good things, and you work to try to get ahead a bit, everything should work out okay. Hopefully your life won't just absolutely suck. Hopefully you'll get what you want. Most people end up getting what they're willing to go after, what they're willing to work for. If you're not willing to work for anything, well, you're not going to get much. But if that's the way you want to be, that's okay. We always talk about poverty as if it's like a disease we catch and, you know, it's like a disease. And you go, it's not like a disease, and there's no pill you can take that'll cure it. You know, poverty is usually a choice. Now, you know, I'm not going to discount the fact that there's hereditary, you know, if you come from a poor family, chances are you're going to be poor. If you come from this or that, your chances to succeed or to become like a corporate CEO become less. I'm not going to discount the fact that that's true. But you can do a lot to affect your circumstance. An awful lot. But it's up to you. You know, and I'm not going to say, you know, you too can be a CEO. I'm not interested in that, so I'm not going to pursue it. It's just like what I said. You tend to get what you work toward. And I don't really want to go for that. I work to make enough money to feed my family, and that's probably about it. And a little bit more, I hope. Oh, God, I hope. Anyway, that's what I do. It's nothing more or less than just that. I got a check here. Okay, I didn't bring it. I knew I wouldn't. I forgot it. There was something I was going to do, and now I'm going to have to put it off for a couple of days because I just flat forgot. And I didn't think about it. I didn't put it all together. I had it set for another circumstance, and that circumstance fell through. It's okay. It'll happen or it won't. I've already got over my time. But that's really all I have to talk about. At least on this subject. You know, we need to give ourselves a break. You know, we think that you know, that the only righteous thing to do is to make lots and lots of money and to be very, very successful and do those things. But that has very little to do with it. Practically nothing. You can do some pretty amazing things when you have money, but they really don't have anything to do with you being, you know, personally saved. Christians may have a point there. You know, they take salvation as being something really simple. I think they simplify it too much. But it really is kind of simple. Now, what we do after that, how we behave and how we do like that, that'll certainly put feathers in our cap, I think. I think it'll get us that much further along. I think it'll help us avoid sliding back down to where we're not going to earn, like the Fleshly Kingdom, for instance. For instance, guy, as if that's just one example. That is the example. That's what we should be shooting for. And it's just like that too, you know. People go, well, you know, I'm not interested in working for the Celestial Kingdom. And it's like, okay, well then you won't get it. You'll get something different. You know, I guess it'll be what you want. And it really will be. It'll be, well, how'd you live your life? And you go, well, I didn't live my life as if that was interesting to me. And you go, well then, you're not going to get it. You don't get the things that you're not willing to pursue. Isn't that the way it is? Except in socialistic societies, where you just get given stuff, and you don't, you know, you really don't value it, because, well, what's the value? Anyway. You can have what you pursue. If you want to have this thing or that thing, I mean, don't be stupid. I mean, if God didn't give you that talent yet, you proceed as if you had the talent. You can work on it, but I'm not going to say it's going to work. I got to answer a phone call. This is Shane. Everyone, have a great day. Bye.